Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for another dose of Confident ROI. The only show that gives you confidence that when you tune in, you're going to learn something to help you, whether you're working in your business, on your business, or with businesses. From the man who's done all three, Alex Verovia. Hey, Alex.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. We're trying something brand new. We're all on Zoom this day. I feel so cutting edge and cool here.
We can see each other.
We can see each other now.
It's the way I'm using Zoom now for like all of my regular calls and everything, because it's finally that way of communicating both audio and visual, and it's pretty easy.
Well, you're always talking about tools and techniques people can use to take their business to the next level. Maybe this is one of them. We've used Skype before. Because quite often you're in the studio here down in Southern California, but when you're not, you're up at your Northern Command Center there patrolling the Canadian border for us here, keeping America safe. And from Canadian geese attacking us here. And when you're doing that, then we have to do it remotely. So, and quite often our guests, like today, are calling in remote. So this is the first time we have a chance to actually see them all and bring them together, and we'll see how this works here.
I think it'll work well. And my favorite thing about Zoom is you can have your own number you have every single time.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, so you don't always have to, like, what's the dial-in number? So you can have, like, your own memorized one, and you just send it out, and people can join in. So.
All right. Well, we'll find out how it helps today here in our first trial run of using Zoom in our live radio show broadcast and later podcast.
We will find out. It's putting it to the test.
We're gonna find out. So anyway, who'd you bring with you today? I see him, but I don't know who he is.
Well, he's actually, I could say he's Batman.
He's Batman. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
He's the Cape Crusader we have on the show today. Amazing.
Well, let's just say that he helped Warner Brothers make a lot of money off Batman that they didn't think they were going
to
make.
Ah, well, I'm fascinated to hear that. You know, once I had a chance to meet and get to know many, many years ago the great Stan Lee, who created all the Marvel Universe of characters. And when I met him, he had just moved from New York to Hollywood trying to get anybody interested in making a movie. And the reason I got to know him so easily, because nobody would meet with him. Nobody would talk to him. Are you crazy? Comic book movies? You got to be out of your mind here. It's before they did all of that. So how the world has changed.
You got to try. You don't know what's going to work till you try it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I remember being in high school, I think it was 1989, and people were wearing Batman T-shirts and hats, and it was part of their identity.
Yes, exactly.
But at the time, movie companies didn't realize the value of it, even after 20th Century Fox gave George Lucas his licensing rights. They go, "Oh, we don't want them. You can keep them."
Exactly. They thought, "What, you're going to work for less, and all you want is to put it on lunchboxes? Have it. Who needs that junk here? You know, the money's in the movie." Now we know that's just a piece of the pie now here.
It's a piece of it, and so there's more money to make, and that's why I brought my guest on. We should probably bring him on instead of just talking.
We're talking about it. Well, he's a mysterious character. He's used to being, you know, in the shadows here. So.
Exactly. So I brought with me today Rand Brenner. He's the CEO of the Licensing Consulting Group, as well as Licensing for Profits. And Rand got his start working for the movie studios, Warner Brothers, and working with Power Rangers and Batman, and bringing these different intellectual properties to a bigger audience so that people could buy them. And there's some psychological issues of why people do that. But there's a whole world beyond licensing wearing a Batman hat. There's also know-how and what I call technical things. So you can either there's stuff that's emotional and there's stuff that's technical. And a lot of people out there going, "Oh, you know, my business can't take advantage of licensing." When I was doing my cleanup CFO work, there was one client that got $10,000 in the mail like clockwork from a company on the other side of the world that was building something that licensed their blueprints. This company didn't want to make it, and they got free money.
Well, you know, I've been approached as the station here, OC Talk Radio, that broadcasts all these things. We have 20-some different business shows. We've been approached many times to create action figures for all of our show hosts, but I wasn't sure if that would work or not. But maybe he can tell us more today here.
Yeah, I haven't signed away my action figure rights. But let's bring on the guest instead of just holding back. Rand, welcome to the show. Rand Brenner, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. Hello, Alex. Nice to meet you, Paul. Glad to be here.
Of all the podcasts you've been on, by far, this is probably the most recent one.
I think so, and I'm looking forward to it. Sounds like we're going to have a lot of fun.
So Rand, why don't you start with if you can give a story or something about a company that was able to access licensing that didn't think possible. Because I'm sure there's a bunch of people that are sitting there going, we could never license that. That's not our business. But
actually, that's a good point. And the first thing I like to say is everybody can do licensing because everybody's got intellectual property. Today, intellectual property has become so prominent as opposed to what it was 30 years ago, which was pretty much patents, trademarks, and copyrights in the U.S. was the only place that this was happening. But a lot has changed in especially the last 15 years. And now it's really become a global business, a global opportunity, because countries around the world finally recognize that at the core of just everything today is intellectual property. That's why you see countries like China, India, and Southeast Asia suddenly get their acts together with intellectual property.
And what is intellectual property?
And intellectual property, most people are familiar with inventions, such as patents, trademarks and brands, characters such as Batman, and then, of course, books and TV shows are copyrights. But you had also mentioned at the beginning know-how, and know-how is something that is part of what's known as trade secrets. And what trade secrets and know-how are information that you've created that does something to create a profit or make something or sell something. It's a trade secret, and it's kept confidential. And today, now, trade secrets have become one of the most valuable and licensed intellectual property in the world today. In fact, if you go to the media today, you'll read all sorts of stories about trade secret theft. There was a famous story about an engineer at Ford that actually walked off with their customer database, thousands and thousands of customers.
Wow.
There's been debates over people who leave companies and take their customer list to their next company, whether or not they even have the rights to own it, which in many cases they don't. And then, of course, some of the most famous trade secrets are the things like Coca-Cola and the recipe for Coke. Everybody loves Coke, but nobody knows exactly how to make Coke.
What's the difference between trade secret and a patent? Because that gets into that, right? Because Coke's not patented, right? It's trade secreted?
It's a trade secret. And the difference between when you patent something, let's say it's a technology or an invention, what you're doing is you're basically telling the world what it is and how to make it and how to create it. In return, you're getting issued a patent by a government agency that says, we're going to give you, and this is something people don't understand. Basically, they have a negative right. They're not protecting anything. What they're doing is they're giving you a document that says you have the right to sue somebody in the event that they start making and using it without your permission. Okay, as opposed to a trademark or a copyright in which you register it and you get protection for that trademark or copyright, meaning you still have the right to sue somebody, but it's protected. Somebody can't just use it because it's been registered.
Okay.
On the other case, trade secrets and know-how are information that's kept confidential. And for example, the reason Coca-Cola doesn't patent its formula is if it did, everybody would know it. Plus, you only have a limited time. Remember, patents expire after a certain period of time. So once you patent something, once your patent expires, anybody can use it. You have a limited window to use it. So today, you'll find a lot of technology companies, a lot of big successful packaged goods companies, especially if they have formulas, if they have software, things like that, they opt to use trade secrets as opposed to patenting, simply because, first of all, they don't have to disclose it. And second of all, they control the information. And third, a trade secret, unlike a patent, a trade secret can last forever. And probably one of the best classic examples of trade secret and how long you can license them for is Listerine, which the mouthwash was developed back in the late 1800s and went to license and has been under license for close to 100 years now. And the reason is because it's a trade secret, the Listerine formula. Of course, there's a lot of other formulas that have come out, but that's the difference. If Listerine had been patented, if that formula had been patented, after 20 years, it'd be public domain based.
Same with, so would you copyright a, you copyright the Listerine name, but not.
Well, that's a trademark.
Right,
Listerine
that's a
is a trademark. And trademarks can go on indefinitely as well. You just have to continue to renew them and keep them, you know, keep the fees up to date.
How do you keep, how do you trade secret something?
Trade secret, you just protect the information. In other words, if you create some software, you've got source code, and that source code creates the software in terms of what it does.
Yeah.
So you keep that secret. In other words, when you license Microsoft Office software, you don't know what the source code is. You're only using the end product, what the source code does.
Right.
And so that's the secret sauce of how it works. And for most of the time, things like source code, recipes, formulas, processes, systems, those things are trade secrets. The information is kept confidential. And today, in fact, a lot of talking of going back to the idea of patents and trade secrets, a lot of patents are licensed with trade secrets because the creation of that technology also requires the know-how behind it to get it to either work or to produce it or to do things in order to bring it to the market. And a lot of that is what's called know-how. It's inside the inventor's head, or it's a certain process that they've developed behind it to make a certain product. You see this in technology. Maybe there's new computer chips that come to the market. Oftentimes, these chips are very complex to make. And even though they've patented the chip, what the real value is the process that they've developed behind it in order to be able to make that chip.
Because, so they're trade secreting the process?
Or yeah, they don't disclose it. And what happens is under a license agreement, they license the patent and the trade secret together. And even after the patent expires, because they have a trade secret in the license, it can continue on for a long time.
Okay. But when you have this trade secret, you don't, when you want to make it a trade secret, you just have to try to keep it secret.
That's right. That's basically.
You don't have to tell the government. You don't file a form.
Right.
You're just like, this is a secret. Now, is there sort of a, you have to demonstrate that you tried to keep it a secret?
Yeah. That's exactly what you do. And basically, you keep it confidential. What you don't want to do with know-how and trade secrets is you don't want to disclose it, what's called publicly. Meaning, if you come to me and say, Rand, this is great. How does that software work? I start sharing the source code with you. That's giving you the trade secret. What I do is I show you how the software works, but I don't show you the source code that makes it work. Or I let you taste my beverage, my super duper energy beverage, but I don't give you the formula for how to make it, okay? Or you love my perfume, your girlfriend loves my perfume and I share it with you and you can smell it and use it, but I don't give you the formula behind it so that you can make it. And
right.
What I do is I keep that basically confidential. And then if I want to license it to you, when I do a license agreement, in that licensing agreement, there's a confidentiality piece of it that you agree to keep whatever I share with you secret. Even after the license expires, you're under what's called a non-disclosure, and you can't use that or share that trade secret with anybody else.
Okay. And then if they did, then you'd have a case against.
Right. Then you could go and take legal action and do all that sort of stuff.
Rand, let's get back. We kind of got familiar with the different terms, but any examples you can share with the audience of a company being able to monetize some of their intellectual capital that they didn't even think was possible?
Well, yeah, a lot of companies have intellectual property. A lot of times they do things that they didn't think they had. You see this, some of the best examples I think, that I've experienced, like, for example, in entertainment, is when companies start off producing a video game or a social media site. And then what happens is it becomes so popular, they're not thinking about it. And then one day somebody comes along and says, hey, I'd like to make a, you mentioned this early on, or I think Paul did, about bobbleheads or something. That's what happens. Somebody comes along and says, would you, can I use your character on my bobbleheads? Can I use it on my t-shirt? Can I use it on my packaging? This is what happens. Sometimes you don't even realize that what you've created is popular enough and it's licensable enough. And the same thing holds true for know-how. Like, for example, I think a good example are people that create marketing systems, sales systems, leadership. If it works for one company, it can work for others. And sometimes what happens is by accident, they get asked whether or not, a client asks them whether or not, hey, can we use your system? We don't want to pay you. We'll pay you for it, but we want to use your know-how system ourselves and use it to train our employees and make money with it.
So they're going to do a licensing of their trade secret?
Correct. And for example, I had a client that worked with Fortune 500 companies. They trained them on workplace safety in the manufacturing plants, and they paid them a lot of money to come in and train their employees. And at some point, the companies came back to them and said, look, we love you, but we don't want to pay you millions anymore. Would you train somebody in our company to be able to do what you do, except at a much lower cost? And then they came to me because they said, wait a minute, we never thought about licensing what we did. We always thought we were just consultants and trainers, and that's what we did. And now these companies are saying they want to learn how to do what we do. And so from there, I worked with them and saying, okay, now you have to package up your know-how, your training, your what you do into a form that you can now license to your clients so that they can use it. That's an example of what can happen as what you do becomes popular. Many people, and I use people as a term, both businesses.
Well, hold on, how did it turn out for that safety? For the safety?
Well, they packaged it up and they're now working with their clients to develop a training program. It's called Train the Trainers, where they take some key employees, let's say somebody from HR or whatever, they bring them in to learn what they had been, you know, teaching in these seminars until they get good enough that they can go back and then replicate what they were doing. So what I did is I worked with them to say, okay, you have to copyright and trademark all these pieces, then you have to bundle it up and give them the materials and then set up courses to train them, and then you have to figure out how you're going to check on the quality and make sure what they're doing is in fact creating the same results that you did when you did it when you did it for them.
Sure. So for this client, they were doing consulting, they had limited number of consultants, they're doing it for big company. They were generating a lot of revenue, but it was all for one company. Finally, the company said, hey, this doesn't seem quite fair to be paying you this much, and we could have someone dedicated towards us. But we want to use your plan. So what's a better solution? So by licensing their system, they're now able to their customers happy for the long haul. And some of these licensing agreements, like we heard, they go for 100 years, like Listerine.
Sure.
And then their business model changed. They went from one session at a time training to now they're still training, but it's more intensive and then for a longer period of time. So, I mean, their return on investment to them is almost incalculable, right?
Well, what happens is initially when this was presented to them, they realized, well, wait, our revenue is going to drop on a per customer basis. But over the long run now, we can expand our business and we can go into more companies, have them set up the training and start generating revenue from those companies doing their own training. So we can actually reach out to more companies, because the limitation, for example, if you're a consultant or an advisor is you can only go so many places so long. But if you could replicate yourself, then you could reach theoretically unlimited number of customers. And that's what licensing allows you to do, is you basically replicate what you do and let others do it and pay you for it.
No, that makes total sense. And yeah, we have a constraint here. Our producer, Paul, our co-host, is ready to go to break. So
okay.
We're going to go to break.
Just a moment to let everybody digest everything that's been said and to remind you that you don't have to just listen to Confident ROI. You can read it now, too. There is a magazine. Yep, there's an accompanying magazine that you can get for free, an actual physical copy of the magazine that you can pick up, or you can order for free, or you can download. You can do either one at ConfidentROI.com. What will you get? Well, you're going to have confidence that you're going to get some cool articles, that's for sure. You're going to get things about... Well, you can get things about Vern Harnish on strategy. How about that? Top grading with Brad Smart, a cure for your hiring headache. Or you can learn about other operating systems like the EOS system. We're going to feature all sorts of different ideas and tools throughout the run of the magazine. And you would be remiss not to pick one up. So you don't have to license it. You don't have to pay any special fees to look at it here. It's free. Go check it out. Confident. ROI, the magazine.com, ConfidentROI.com. I had a question as I'm listening to this here. You know, we created an online radio station, a unique niche. Nothing we did is proprietary in that we didn't invent anything. But the way we pulled all these things together, using Skype, streaming it live, turning it into podcasts, I tend to view as a unique system. It's not something others could figure out easily. It took me forever to figure out. Is that some sort of trade secret that I could license to others, even though I guess you could figure it out yourself if you put 3 years into it like I did?
The answer is yes, you could, because what you've done when you've created a system of figuring this all out, as you said, that has taken you years.
Right.
That's the value to a potential licensing partner. If you went to another company and said, gee, Paul, I'd love to be able to do what you do, but I'm not sure how to do it.
Right.
Great. Well, let me show you how to do it. I'll just license you my system and we'll figure out what you'll pay me, but I'll give you a turnkey system that you can put to work right away and it works every time. And why is that valuable? Simply because, as you said, they would have to spend years trying to figure it out.
Right.
You give them your system, which you know works, which means they're up and running in a month, maybe less,
right,
making money. That's
okay.
The value of it.
Well, we'll have to talk offline here about that, because I think that's applicable to lots of businesses, don't you, Alex? There are lots of people that have come up with something. They've figured out how to do what others haven't, but they don't think there's any value in that other than it allows them to have a business. But they don't think it's something they can transfer to others because it's not a patent. It's not a secret formula. It's a way of doing business that they've discovered through trial and error over a couple-year period.
And that's the way all businesses are formed, is trial and error. I think one of the things is business leaders get so consumed with the day-to-day business, it's hard to step back and look at things. And, hey, what can we do differently? Or how could we create a new revenue stream? It's really easy to just assume, well, you just got to keep doing what you're doing. You know, you mentioned the magazine, the Confident ROI magazine. If it wasn't for licensing, I wouldn't have some of the articles I have in there. That some of the authors, they license their work. And now you can bring content to people through licensing. It's so much more easier. It's more people are aware of it. And 30 years ago, even the people like Warner Brothers weren't aware of it.
That's true.
And that is changing the environment and allowing people to do it. Rand, have you ever seen somebody just hit their head and like, I can't believe we never thought of this?
All the time. And that's what I say about licensing. It's like, look, if you've created something and it works, think of it this way. When you're in business and you're developing your systems and figuring out how to sell your products or solve your problems for your clients, you're not the only one with those same issues. There's others out there that are maybe not exactly the same thing, but they're looking for systems. They're looking for solutions to problems. So if you've created something that works for your clients and it works great, and you've got 50, 100 clients that you're all helping to sell more real estate or sell more products or improve their bottom line, then there's other people out there that would like to know that that system is and use it to help their customers. So when it comes to licensing, what you really need to be thinking about is, if I do these things inside my business and they work and I'm successful and it's a system, and I'm talking about beyond just selling a widget, like a mug or something, and this is all we do, we just sell somebody else's mugs. I'm talking about if you've designed something, like here's a perfect example. Amazon, one of their biggest patents was they figured out a better way to sell to the customer using a one-click order system. And they got a method patent on that. Basically, it was a way to speed you through a checkout. You found a product, and instead of having to enter all your information over and over again, they figured out, hey, what if we had a system that collected all their data, and when they found the product, all they have to do is go click here, and boom, they instantly buy it. That was something that solved a big problem for customers constantly having to add their information over and over. And as a result of that, that patent created a lot of controversy in the online marketplace, and there was a lot of litigation that went around on between other companies that tried to use that system because Amazon had patented it.
Right. Now, but does that patent eventually expire?
Yes, all patents eventually expire, and of course, that was a long time ago, a couple of decades ago, so that's expired since then. So many companies now are using these one-click systems, but back then, that was a big deal. And another case, which is interesting, is Dell. Dell had came up on-demand computers. Basically, they didn't build them. They built them on demand. And that had a business method in itself as well that got protected under patents. So they had a method and a system that allowed them to do what they're doing and keep others from doing it. And then so there's many stories of businesses that create these systems that are valuable and then use them to either keep people out or license them out. And today what you're finding is a good example are these very large packaged goods corporations like P&G. They have all these systems they've developed for manufacturing, for product development, for packaging, you name it. And what many people don't realize is they license it out to their competitors and other companies. They license their packaging systems out. They license their manufacturing systems. And you say, well, why would they do that? The answer is because they're valuable to them, obviously, to make and sell their products, but they realize they've also got value to other companies and they could be generating additional revenue by allowing them to use their systems. So what they do is they recognize, look, we've spent millions of dollars or years developing these systems and they work great. They're very efficient. Why not license them to other companies to use as well and make some extra money?
And so what would their first step be there? You know, okay, we got this way of doing business and people are asking about it and people from other industries. Mm-hmm. What's your first step? Okay, what do you do? You put something on Craigslist or?
No, you wouldn't want to do it on Craigslist. But that's a good point. The first thing you have to do is for a lot of these systems, especially, let's say you're a small business owner, you've probably been doing a lot of things and they work great, you're making a lot of money, and a lot of this stuff is in your head or in the heads of you and your employees because you just know how to do it. That's why they call it know-how. First thing you have to do is get it on paper. So you have to capture all of this information, these processes, systems, and procedures on paper so that you have some way of being able to document it and, more importantly, communicate it to somebody else to be able to use, because it has to be in some form. So that's the first thing you really need to do, is to capture it on paper, and then, you know, from there, document how it's used to create X result. You use this manufacturing system and you can make, you know, 1,000 widgets at a fraction of the price. You use this production system. Whatever the case is, you document it so that you can go to a company who's interested in using it and saying, here's the system. Here's how it works. Here's how you implement it. Here's how you set it up. And here's how you get the results. And that's, you know, in a nutshell, that's how it's done. Obviously, it takes time to put that all together, but that's basically how it works.
Okay, so you put it together and you got something together. Now what? I mean, you don't want to put it online and say, hey, here's my system.
Well, now you have to use it. Going back to the example I used with the consulting company I work with, I mean, somebody comes to you and asks a question such as, you know, we'd like to do it ourselves. Or maybe your competitor has been using it. you have to go out and do something with it. Usually, I have found in my experience, for the most part, companies start licensing out their know-how and business systems when somebody comes to ask them, can we use it? Or a client asks them, can they use it? Or in the case recently, I'm talking to a company that has contacted me. They're a big consulting company, and they've created their own, you know, leadership business systems that they've been using with their clients. And they came to me and said, look, we've been working with startups and entrepreneurs for decades now. We think we've got something. Can we license it? And my discussion with them is, yes, you can. This is the process you need to go through to capture all of this and set it up so that you can license it to other companies. So that, again, was another trigger point where companies sat down and said, and again, I use consultants and business and professional know-how providers for a reason, because you're limited by your own body or your number of bodies in your offices to be able to replicate.
So that people asking you, hey, can you use it? That should be something that, hey, you know, especially if you're getting multiple, hey, can we can we use it? You need to have your antenna on. What about, okay, now you're getting one or two people to use it. Is there really a market for it?
Well, that's what you have to determine. I mean, maybe it's only one or two licensees, or maybe you discover that there's a large market for it. Maybe you've got, for example, marketing systems that work well for companies, online companies, or real estate. Maybe you have a real estate sales system. So it just depends on the market that you're going after, and is there value for it. Or maybe you're a consultant that you've been working with mid-sized companies, and you've got a system that works really well. Well, there's lots of consultants looking for ways to expand their business and find new systems that they can plug into. You know, one of the challenging things in the market, of course, is to create something that works, especially if you're on your own, you're trying to figure out a marketing system or business system. That could take years, cost you a lot of money. You may make it, you may not. But if you can find one that already works, then there's some value in it. And so, that's really what we're talking about when it comes to
licensing out. That makes sense. But let's take an example people can see, football teams. And there's been certain football coaches that they came out of the breakthrough, and all their assistant coaches went out and basically implemented the plan that they had in the way of organizing the team, the way of their strategy and their playbook. Can those teams trade secret that? I mean, can they protect that? Can they license it?
Yeah, you know, they probably have. There's a lot of fine lines when it comes to this type of trade secret, especially when it relates to somebody's livelihood. So some things are on a borderline where they say, well, yes, they may have created the strategy and the plays for your football team, but you can't restrict them from going somewhere else to practice their livelihood. So in certain cases where it's not something that can easily be packaged up, and like you wouldn't want to, if you're professional football team A and you have all these great strategies and plays and you know they work, you wouldn't want to license them to your competitor because you'll wind up playing them and they'll know.
But you can can you trade secret then?
Well, the plays are technically trade secrets,
I kind of use the litmus test of, can you carry it out in your head? If you can remember.
Well, you can't. I mean, technically, you could carry all trade secrets out in your head, but that's why when companies have employees, they make them sign non-disclosures and confidentialities, and it says if you ever leave, you can't use this with any competitor. You can't use this formula. You can't use this customer list. You can't use whatever. And this is an area that a lot of businesses may be overlooking. In fact, I know a lot of them overlook, is they have employees that come in. And this is important to understand. If you have employees today and they're working for you, let's say they're making software for you, source code. Right. If they haven't signed what's called a work for hire, or that's part of their agreement, they technically own whatever they create for you as intellectual property. It's theirs. If you haven't created that and they walk away, they can turn around and say, look, you can't use that source code I wrote for you unless you license it from me. And now you're in trouble. Facebook had this issue come up. They had some... this was years ago. One of the engineers or somebody early on who had worked at Facebook and developed this, they had attempted to come back and said, look, you never made us sign a work for hire, and we're going to sue you for millions and millions and millions of dollars, claiming that they did the work for hire and that there was never a work for hire agreement. Now, the outcome of that suit, I don't know what happened there, but that's an example of, it's not necessarily that they'll walk away and anything will happen right away, but these things are notorious and have a way of coming back to bite you when all of a sudden you're famous and you're doing well and making lots of money, and then somebody suddenly wants royalties.
Well, it's almost a bigger club than the overtime laws, that employees come back and say, look, you made me work overtime and I want to get paid. And, you know, that's quantifiable. Okay, maybe that you work, we can estimate. I know that Donald Trump's, one of his drivers is suing him for overtime right now. But to come back and say, hey, everything I created, because there's kind of an assumption, well, if I'm paying you, I own what you create.
Right.
But you're saying is, unless you stipulate that, you don't have that.
That's correct.
That's correct.
And that catches a lot. You'd be surprised. I meet a lot of especially startups, businesses that are just getting going, and they hire
work for hire.
Yeah, they hired people early on. Maybe they could get it done for little or no cost. They didn't get a work for hire, and now they're back saying, well, wait a minute, you guys just raised $50 million.
That's a heck of an ROI to get that in place.
Yeah, it is. So you have to be careful. But this is the what's happening with intellectual property today. That's why every business has intellectual property day, whether they create a website, whether they have web pages, whether they're selling products, selling services, everything you're creating, there's some aspect of intellectual property around it. A lot of it doesn't get captured because people don't recognize it.
Right.
You know, they're always thinking it's a patent, trademark, or copyright, and not realizing this whole area of trade secrets and know-how is huge. And there's a lot of companies that don't realize what they're sitting on.
It's kind of one of the new battlefields. I mean, there's kind of a war going on in cyberspace and security and that. And I see all these headlines between the big boys fighting it out and buying Motorola just for its patents, and
that's what's happening.
Blackberries, and they're just buying a basket of patents, and so that they can fight someone else. They have patent wars.
But what
we found is you can't just ignore what's going on. And well, that doesn't apply to me, because this just disruption wave is really hitting every part of business, right? Things keep changing and evolving. And this is one of those tools that you either know how to use or someone's going to use on you.
It could be
a competitor. It can be if I've never done business with you and I've never done business, but I watch how you're doing it. If that's a trade secret, but I haven't had a relationship with you, can I do business like that?
Well, sure. I mean, if you haven't, obviously a lot of companies can see what other companies are doing and they can do what similar things, but they don't necessarily know what's going on in the background. Maybe it's two furniture companies producing high-end furniture, and one of them is doing better than the other because one of them has got this, you know, really high-tech manufacturing, and they know how to engineer and they know how to do things that the other one doesn't know how to do. You know, until an employee walks out from one and goes into the other and suddenly they're doing the same thing, then you have a problem.
When there's a direct link.
Right.
But
usually not. But you're right. I mean, the world is changing very rapidly. Intellectual property is the game today. All companies today, if there's going to be an acquisition, it's going to be around the intellectual property. Plants, equipment, you know, desks, furniture, office space, that stuff doesn't mean anything anymore. It's really about the IP, and it's what you do with your IP that makes a difference. And, everything is accelerating. Technologies are coming to the market faster. You don't have the time you used to. You get your technology, you get your patent, you think, oh, I've got 5 or 6 years to build a business. No, you don't. There's too much competition coming in. It's about getting to market sooner rather than later. It's the fastest to market wins. Competition is changing radically. Big, huge companies are coming into markets that weren't there. For example, the big high-tech companies are moving into healthcare and vice versa. So you really have to understand, as a small or a startup, things are changing, and licensing, managing your IP and licensing are probably one of the best strategies you can use.
All right. After the break, we'll talk about what people can do proactively to prepare for this latest round of disruption as we go to our intellectual property in the studios. My intellectual property, Paul.
Well, you know, I'm going to give you another way to look at it. You know, if you're trying to decide what business tool or concept, like licensing, to implement to advance your company, but you're frustrated by the process, you don't know what to do or where to turn to, you might need a different sort of IP. You might need some intelligent people in the room, somebody that's actually done it and been there before, somebody like our guest or somebody like our host, Alex Vorobyev. He was the first business advisor to focus on helping companies and leaders find their unique starting point and the right tools to carry them through to the finish. All of that sounds appealing to you. If you want to learn more about the tools and techniques you should put to take your business to the next level, then there's only one place to go with confidence. It's ConfidentROI.com. ConfidentROI.com. You can even ask a question. We got a section that says, "Hey, Vorobyev." So fire away. See what he says. Or call him at his office, 949-478-0042. That's 478-0042. Put some intelligent people on your platform. Maybe that's what IP really is. It's not just the intellectual property. It's the intelligence behind that's been put into these creations here.
Exactly what it is. Actually, when you think about it, intellectual property, intellectual by its very nature, it is.
But the gray areas within this space, it's interesting. You know, in the music industry, if one song happens to have something that's familiar with another song, there's a claim. But in the fashion industry, they copy each other all the time.
They do.
There's not a claim. Except, I guess, the red shoes on Louis Vuitton.
Well, the fashion industry has been getting more and more into protecting their designs, because with patents, you can also use design patents.
Okay.
Protect designs. You've got, in trademarks, you've got what's called trade dress, which protects the appearance and the look. So even in the fashion industry today, you are correct, there's a lot of knockoffs, they're trying to protect the look and the design because that's what makes them unique. And you see a lot of that. For instance, Tiffany has this turquoise blue, and that's patented. That's their trade dress. You don't mess with Tiffany's on that turquoise blue.
Or they own the color.
They own the color blue. UPS has trademarked the color brown. The colors are very big. And trademarks is interesting. Trademarks are more than just logos today. You can have trademark colors. You have trademark symbols. You have trademark sounds. There are even trademark scents. There's very few of them, but there's actually trademark scents. And
how do you define that?
Well, it's very hard, but I mean, and they're far and few between. It has to be a really unique scent. You know, like fresh cut grass is the scent, believe it or not, for a Japanese tire maker. Don't ask me how that works, but that's what it is. Those are hard to get because obviously scents are very fine-tuned, which interestingly, perfume companies can't trademark their scents because it's a perfume.
Perfume doesn't apply, the smell doesn't, but they probably can protect their name.
Yeah, they protect their name, but because the perfume is the product, you can't really trademark it. And again, you know, perfumes have such variance in their fragrances, but it's trademarked. So, you know, Chanel, for example, very big trademark name, and they're very protective of that. But the scents themselves are trade secrets. They don't tell you how they mix up that perfume to get it to smell the way that it smells. That's
okay.
A big trade secret.
That's a trade secret.
But other aspects of trademarks, like I said, colors and sounds.
What about cars? I mean, there's a certain Korean car company that I see their cars and I think it's, hey, is that a Bentley grill? Or it kind of's got the...
They're trying to do that too. They're trying to protect their designs on the cars. And a number of car companies have certain stylistic features that you see. Jaguar has that Jag coming off the top. BMW has its certain brown logo emblem. Rolls-Royce has the double R's. So they do things to make...
But those are those are trademarks, right?
Yeah, they're trademarks.
But like the styling of the grill and the angle of the line on the side, that, you know, Mercedes has one that Hyundai is,
You know? Well, sometimes they can do that. And you know, they're all looking into it. They're all looking at ways of protecting the design of their vehicles. Obviously, it has to be very unique to have it happen. But they're looking at it from a trade dress. Maybe they're even looking at it from a design patent standpoint. But again, it has to be so unique and different that they can qualify for it. That'll pass muster, so to speak.
Yeah. So like, let's look at podcast. It came out of nowhere. I think it was when the VH1. I think Paul told me a story. The VH1 or one of the original MTV video jockeys. They wanted to have to communicate with the outside world, and they didn't have a radio show, so they did the first podcast. Mm-hmm. Could they have licensed that then, or not? I don't know, licensed, but patented or caught? Can they have protected it at the time when it was so brand new?
You know, maybe they looked into it, but but probably not. I mean, a lot of times these technologies evolve. People don't think about the name. They came up with the name podcast, never bothered to do anything with that.
And so is then the genie out of the bottle at a certain point?
At that point, it's out of the bottle because others started using it. You know, remember with a trademark, if you're using it, and trademarks are very specific. You can't get a trademark just for a general. You have to say, I want it for shirts or hats or radio shows or whatever it is. But after a while, if you don't do anything to get it, then, you know, you're not going to get it because others are using it.
And in fact, I have to just pipe in, and that was a real source of controversy recently. There was an early patent issued for something. They weren't thinking of podcasts, but they were thinking of basically embedding an RSS code, a way to attach the file to whatever gets forwarded, sort of like an audio blog, and that's sort of at the basis of podcasting. You send somebody a file that's embedded already in something that you've created, like a blog post. And without getting into great detail, somebody bought a patent troll, as they're called, bought this dead patent from somebody early on and tried to come back and sue everybody and say, we own every podcast, has mine included, everyone out there has to pay us a licensing fee. We patented this process way early on. And the courts threw that out, said, no, that's too vague and too far. Just as there was a guy named Harry Seldon who early on in the days of automotive industry supposedly patented the internal combustion engine or something like it. And he, for years, every manufacturer in the 1910s and whatnot gave him a licensing fee for every car made until Henry Ford stood up and said, nonsense. Yep. You know, what we're doing is not patentable. So there are limits to what you can patent. I can't come up with something that's so generic that everybody suddenly... I can't patent the internet. I can't say I'm the first one to come up with the internet, and everybody that's on the internet has to give me a dollar here. So very interesting debate about what's patentable and what's not, how far you can extend a license and how far... And there are people who make a living off of buying up dead licenses in the hope that they can come back and apply it retroactively to some future technology and say, well, it's not exactly, but that's what they were thinking about, and you owe me some money.
Yeah, that's true. That's part of the problem with the patent industry. There's so many patents that are issued, it's very hard to keep up with all the different claims. And that's where you get these patent trolls showing up and people stepping on each other's toes and lots of litigation going on. And that's a challenge, too, today, more than ever it's been. When you get a patent, and I mean, I joke about this, but I tell people, you get a patent, and they say, oh, great, I'm protected. I've got no problems. I said, no, actually, what you've got is a ticking time bomb.
Yeah, right.
Because you don't know. You've got these claims. But think about this. I think the patent office just last a couple of weeks announced that they've issued the 10 millionth patent.
Wow.
Now, can you imagine 10 million patents, how many claims that includes? So you're not sure. You don't know if your claims are overlapping somebody else's or somebody that gets on top of yours. It's a very challenging market. And so today there's a lot of litigation that revolves around these companies that have, as you said, Paul, these patents that maybe are 15 years old. They're trying to revive them, and suddenly they've got some obscure claim. And now all of a sudden they're going after it using litigation.
And the other lesson I learned from a client years ago is patents don't enforce themselves. So
That's
you have
it.
A patent. You've protected it, your intellectual property, whatever it is. You've got a copyright, a patent on this thing, and somebody comes along and violates and says, sue me. Go ahead.
That's it.
Sue me. By the time you catch up with me, I will have sold 20 million copies of these things, and I'll be gone.
Unless it would cost them about $5 million to sue them anyway.
Yes, right. And so you're a startup company. You think you're protected. You write them a letter, and they say, I don't care. Sue me. And they're guessing that you don't have the money or time or talent to pursue it.
Most companies don't. But that's where licensing can be a great strategy, because it is a strategy you can use to help offset that risk for you, especially if you're a small company. So, the world of patents is changing. I think every company today has really got to take a look at what they've got from a patent.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it's been a great conversation. We've certainly covered a lot of topics, especially around the know-how and the trade secrets that we often don't get to talk about. And I think there's a lot of questions about it. But going back to your point, Alex, about what businesses have, if there's one takeaway I can say today is that every business, everybody has intellectual property. And I think it's important, one, that they understand what they've got, two, that they figure out how to grab it and inventory it or whatever it is. And then three, take a serious look. If it's got a lot of value to them, it's got a lot of value to others. And that's where licensing can be a great option for them. And I encourage every company today, every business, everyone listening today, if you think you've got some valuable IP, by all means, let's explore the possibility of licensing.
That sounds great. That's great, Rand. It's just what the opportunities are. But today, I mean, just as the one takeaway, I'd say for all business leaders and owners is that work for hire. I mean,
oh yeah, that's another one.
You can become a reverse hostage instantly, and that is quite a frightening. I'd never heard that.
Yes,
and so I can only imagine in California if somebody used that.
Come on, don't blame us here in California all the time.
You know, I'm liberated from the States. I was born and raised, but I've escaped.
You know, I've licensed the term California, though, so I'm going to have to ask you to send me a dollar here now.
Oh, no. Every time we write California on that return envelope, we all call it, a dime now?
A dime. I think it's up to a dime. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow.
So how does everybody get in touch with everybody here?
Yeah, Rand, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, the best way is to, you can send me an email at rand@licensingcg, licensing C as in consulting, G as in group.com, or you can visit my website, www.licensingcg.com. You'll find lots of information, blog articles, special reports, webinars, seminars, all sorts of great information. You can send me a quick email with a question. We can schedule a call and we can go from there.
Yeah, I was at your site, Licensing for Profits, and
that's the other site I have too as well.
Yeah, and you have the ability to schedule a time to talk with you, because I wanted to talk with you about how to use the intellectual property of confident ROI in the future. So it was easy. I was able to do that. Thanks for coming on, Rand.
My pleasure. Enjoyed it.
Appreciate coming on, and hopefully people will reach out to you.
Okay. Look forward. Thanks again, yeah. Alex. Paul, thank you.
Well, if you want to hear more or read more, there's only one site to visit. That's confidentroi.com. Check it out. You can find all the podcasts, find future guests, and find out how to get a copy of that magazine. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.